Since 2015, Pop Health Podcast has brought to you some of the best minds in healthcare, including leaders from government, not-for-profit, and investor-backed powerhouses, as they share successes, failures, and how our audience can move forward in today's constantly evolving healthcare world. Thank you for joining us for today's episode presented by 24 Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. I'm Gavin Ward, host of Pop Health Podcast. In today's episode, I had the opportunity to sit down with Valerie Martinez, who serves as the Chief Health Equity Officer for Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan. In today's episode, we had the opportunity to learn a little bit about Val's background and the passion that she brings to the role, which she's now been in for 18 months. For those of you that don't know, the Chief Health Equity Officer role is relatively new and is mandated for health plans here in California, especially for those serving the Medi-Cal population, where many of you may be aware there is really an access to care and equity issue that we see among different populations of focus. In today's episode, Val will give a little bit of her background into how she came into the role and ultimately how the first 18 months have gone. And you'll see there's been some pretty good progress. And what I really like about her is she talks about using facts and data to push things forward. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Feel free to check out other episodes of Pop Health Podcast by visiting us at pophealthpodcast.com, watching us on our YouTube channel, or visiting us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy today's episode. Valerie, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Thank you, Gavin. Thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. It's been a long time since I've known you and seen you at different conferences. And I know we've talked in the past about doing this at one point. And so really grateful that we're here today to do the podcast. You might know Valerie, or I might call you Val too, since that's what you mentioned all the folks call you. We'd like to get to know the guest a little bit before jumping into the core content of our episode. So can you tell us something about yourself, maybe something out of the healthcare world, like a fun fact, hobby, something like that?
Sure thing. Let's see. I am a Southern California native. I don't think I can picture myself living anywhere other than Southern California. Something fun about me. I love music, always have music on. My family calls me a human jukebox because I can hear just a small snippet of a song and tell you the name and artist. So it's kind of a fun thing I like to do. I will say the one caveat is not as well versed in country, but everything else, you name it, 70s, 80s, 90s, I got you.
Got it. Well, the big thing nowadays, I guess, is Taylor Swift. So have you heard about the new album?
I have. Yeah. Okay.
And you know those songs too?
I listened to the album all the way through once. Can't quite pick them up by ear yet, but all of her old songs probably could.
All right. Awesome. Okay, cool. So you mentioned Southern California. I can't remember about any San Gabriel Valley or 626 connection.
Yes. Yep. I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley and went to school in San Gabriel and then moved to Whittier and then also later in adulthood to Pomona. So along that 210 freeway belt there, very comfortable and know the area like the back of my hand. I would consider that to be home. If people ask me, where are you from? I would say San Gabriel Valley.
That is awesome. I am sitting in Temple City right now for this recording. So you grew up the town right next door. So
yeah,
that is awesome. Cool. So you're growing up in the San Gabriel Valley. Tell us like about your trajectory and how you ultimately got into healthcare.
Sure. So I am by way of education, my background is in public health, community health education. I started out, my very first internship was at Planned Parenthood, and I was a youth health educator, and then got into the youth health education area, started teaching a teen pregnancy prevention program, so sex education for youth and healthy relationships and communication. And I taught all along, all through LA Unified School District. So it became very comfortable with working with the populations there. And then I thought, I love working with youth, adolescents, especially those who are at risk or maybe high risk. And so really got into then public health and being an advocate for what we would call marginalized or disenfranchised populations. I worked in federally qualified health centers, and I had the opportunity to be able to advocate and support and work alongside populations. I did HIV testing at night. We would go on a mobile unit to a local gay bar. And so we would perform testing on folks. I taught in domestic violence shelters, in jails and prisons with youth who were incarcerated. I taught at community schools for youth who were either expelled or suspended and they went to alternative schools. So I would say very comfortable working with probably the most disenfranchised populations and being their advocate and seeing them and hearing them and being able to advocate for their needs. So I think that's how I got into public health, which then led me to this role, right, as Chief Health Equity Officer for Blue Shield Promise.
Yeah, that is awesome. Wow, you've been serving the community for sounds like a while, even though you're I consider you a young lady, but you're a veteran. Some people joke when I don't call me a veteran, it makes me sound old, but I don't think so. Basically, you've been doing it since the early part of your career. So tell us about Blue Shield. So I think before I got into healthcare, when I think of Blue Shield, I think of, oh, okay, that's like my friend's family's health insurance, right? They go see whatever doctor they want. They pay like a $20 copay and Blue Shield covers the rest. That's what I think of Blue Shield. Can you tell us really what Blue Shield is? And then also how Blue Shield Promise is a part of the Blue Shield family, I guess.
Certainly. Yeah, Blue Shield of California, it's a nonprofit health plan, and the mission is to help ensure that all Californians have access to high quality health care. And to date, we serve 4.8 million members in all counties across the state of California. So that's Blue Shield of California. And then when we look specifically at Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan, there's a little bit of history there. So in 2015, Blue Shield of California acquired CareFirst Health Plan. And in 2019, the name was changed from Care First to Blue Shield of California Promise Health Plan. And that signified then our commitment to our members and to our communities that we serve. And so Blue Shield Promise is a Medi-Cal health plan, and it is wholly owned by Blue Shield of California, but we offer healthcare coverage for Medi-Cal beneficiaries specific to Los Angeles and San Diego counties. And so we're led by our healthcare professionals, our team, and we really put a member first philosophy into everything that we do. And so we're committed to then building this quality, a quality network, right, of physicians, of our partners, where we're working to address community and our members' health. And so with Promise, we currently serve over 430,000 Blue Shield Promise Medi-Cal members.
Okay, great. So almost 500,000 in those two counties. The word promise stands out to me. You know, do you know, and forgive me if you don't, but do you know where the word promise came from when changing names in 2019?
Yeah, I know a little bit about it, right? Signifying the commitment or the promise, right, to the members that we are choosing to serve. And I can get you a more formal statement on the history or the evolution of the name, how it came to be, but definitely signifies our commitment or our promise to our members as a health plan.
Okay, cool. You've given us a little bit of history about kind of your background and what you've done in the community. And now you're obviously here in a leadership role. When did you first hear of the opportunity with Blue Shield Promise?
I heard about the opportunity, I would say, in 2022, right? This was where there was a new mandate that the Chief Health Equity Officer role was a required officer position now from the Department of Healthcare Services. And really, the position evolved from after the pandemic when we had COVID-19, the Department of Healthcare Services, they mandated that every health plan employ a Chief Health Equity Officer. So I started seeing the postings come up, and I was doing some equity work at a previous employer. And I thought, I definitely want to stay in California. I want to serve the Medi-Cal population. And this is just so aligned with everything that I've done with community health, with public health, and wanting to, again, be that advocate for the most vulnerable disenfranchised groups. And so I saw the position in about 2022. And then looked into it a little further, and I made the move to Blue Shield of California, and so happy that I did.
Okay, awesome. And so how long have you been in the role now? Is it about 2 years now?
It's been about a year and a half. Okay. So, yep.
And how is it what you envisioned? Is it different? Tell us about that first year and a half.
Yeah, it is definitely what I envisioned, recognizing that there's going to be a significant lift because this is a new program requirement, right? So the first piece is that we've got to build what Department of Healthcare Services is calling a quality improvement and health equity transformation program. So recognizing we've got to build a program and then understanding that there are needs, and our main goal as chief health equity officers is to be able to reduce disparities and combat those systemic inequities. So recognizing the balance of programmatic, but then also working to identify those critical partnerships and using a data-driven approach to be able to address the disparities is how I've taken the last year and a half, right, to understand what are the needs of our communities, of our partners, and then using that data-driven approach to be able to identify where should we begin and design those interventions.
Awesome. I love how you say data-driven approach, and you've used that phrase or data multiple times in the last minute. So to me, like, facts are important, right? Data, not just thumb in the air, which way is the wind blowing? So most folks that listen to the show or watch the show are typically in the healthcare world and probably can pick up on a lot of the key phrases you mentioned, but not everybody can. So when you say like healthcare disparity or systematic inequities, could you give us a couple examples of what that means?
Sure. So disparities are, I would say, differences between populations, right? So we can see that, I'll give you an example for breast cancer. We can see that white women are screened more, yet Black or African-American women are more likely to die from breast cancer. And so there's a disparity there, right? And the disparity would be that Black women are less likely to get treated and screening resulting in their death because they weren't able to have that treatment, whereas white women are less likely to die because they're screened more often. So you have that disparity or the difference between those two populations.
That's a great example. So you've been doing this for a year and a half. It's what you've envisioned. Can you tell us some of the progress that you've made in the first year and a half?
Sure. So we launched what we call lovingly our HEART program, and that is synonymous with the Department of Healthcare Services. They call it Quality Improvement and Health Equity Transformation Program. So it's a mouthful. It's QIHETP is the acronym. So we could not phonetically sound that out. So instead, we made an analogous acronym called HEART, which stands for Health Equity Advancements Resulting in Transformation. So synonymous with the QIHETP, but we here call it our HEART program. And everybody refers to us as the HEART team, and it's our HEART program. We have a HEART measure set. We have a HEART advocate program we've designed and launched. And so HEART is really taking shape here. And so it's our commitment and our formalization of our health equity program. So first year was getting that foundation built to say, this is our program. Here's what we're going to do. We've got goals, objectives, an evaluation plan we have to do. And I'm proud to say that we've really looked at research best practices. What should a model health equity program look like? And we've designed our model after that. And so we have five pillars of our HEART program. One is to transform, where we're linking quality and equity together, but then also transforming our practices and the communities by listening to them and their needs and being able to better serve them. We're also looking to build, whether it's building or cultivating a culture of equity internally, externally, the community mobilization surrounding some of our multidisciplinary efforts. That's that build portion. And then we're looking to heal, right? Reimagining the member experience with CalAIM. And then what I would say, facilitating the bridge to somewhere, right? Often in healthcare, we see a referral and we don't know if that patient ever made it to that referral. So looking to see, instead of a bridge to somewhere or nowhere, looking to see that there was a safe handoff and a transition so that that person could get those necessary services that they need. And then we're looking to partner and then also champion being able to address those social inequities or the disparities, and recognizing that we as a health plan cannot do this alone, right? We have to partner, and this work cannot be done in a silo. So we're really excited to be able to partner with our network providers and some community agencies to be able to be partners in care truly, and recognize that we all play a role in this equity journey. So that's kind of the foundation for our HEART program. Kind of a long response to your question about what have we accomplished, but I think that it truly did take a year and a half for this change management, right? It's a new health equity office, a whole new program. We've got to partner with teams internally, teams externally, and I feel confident that we did it right and we didn't rush, and we're not trying to check a regulatory box here at Promise. I think that's very clear from our leadership team, from Kristen Cerf, who's our president and CEO. She has made it clear that we will incorporate equity into everything that we do. So I've seen my role as a vehicle for being able to implement and champion that work.
I love how you address that, the checking the box. You're candid about it, you know, and I love it. And I've met Kristen briefly in passing at a conference. I know she's been there for a while now, so it's great that she's advocating for you to, and your department, I guess, to be involved in everything that you guys do. Now, is it a department? Are you like a one person show? Like, how does, what's the structure, I guess, of your department? Yeah.
Sure. So I report to Kristen as president, and we have the Health Equity Office, which is a department. Yep. So we're a new department. I am a lean team of, there's three of us total. It's lean, but I'll say that it's working because our design, like we said, is intentional, that we are building capacity within the organization. Because I worked in quality previously, and I would often say, I am not quality, right? As much as I want my name to be synonymous with health equity or with quality, we're all responsible for equity here. So I'm working with teams to be able to give them the resources, the support, the best practices, the intelligence, so that they can incorporate equity into their strategic planning. So I'm not doing the work for them. Instead, we're building that capacity so teams can approach this work with the health equity lens. And actually, I gave everybody health equity glasses. I don't know if you can see them here. Yeah, and so we talk about putting on the equity lens, right? And challenging us when we're designing, when we're planning policies, asking those questions. Where are we a barrier? Where are we a hindrance? How can we remove those barriers or those obstacles to care or access? And so training teams to be able to have that capacity. So yes, we're a lean team, but we're really getting the word out and building the capacity across the entire enterprise.
That's great. Well, you mentioned, you know, it's taken a while. You've built it. You've done a lot in this first year and a half, and seems to have some success, some advocacy from the top for your department. What about challenges? I mean, this is not easy work. I know you mentioned it's been what you've envisioned, which probably means really good things, but what have been maybe some barriers in this first year and a half to getting to where you want to be?
Barriers, I would say, it's new, right? It's the new hot topic. So recognizing that health equity is important, it's vital that we take this equitable approach. I would say that some people might think it's a hot topic in that it's what's going to be the next new hot topic or topic du jour or campaign du jour in the next 1, 3, 5 years. Yeah. And I think that recognizing that health equity is here to stay, and we have to address those disparities and those inequities to move the collective needle. So challenge-wise, I would say getting people on board to recognize that disparities do exist. Maybe by way of our privilege, we don't have a front row seat to them, but getting people to realize and acknowledge they do exist, and people are treated differently, outcomes are different due to lack of trust in the system, lack of access, right? There are barriers that are there. So I think that changing the culture is one, and not necessarily within Blue Shield, just as a whole, right? Making sure that folks in the industry are getting it, and this is not going to go away, especially with the support of the mandates from Department of Healthcare Services and what we know is to follow from the Department of Managed Healthcare, also NCQA, right? We're seeking health equity accreditation. So this is here to stay. I would say that has been not necessarily a challenge, but getting folks to recognize the importance and how critical this work is. And then number two, I think what I've seen in the last year is how important data is. And yeah, it's the completeness of the data, right? Because when we look at health disparities, you brought up my data-driven approach, because we have to know where to look to be able to understand those inequities. But we don't know where to look if we don't have complete data. So if I don't have complete race and ethnicity data, that's going to make it really difficult to pinpoint where the challenges are. So I would say, looking at standardization of data, access to complete data, and then also access to the demographic variables that we need to be able to design those custom interventions, whether we're looking at sexual orientation, gender identity, race and ethnicity. The more complete data that we have, the better and more effective our interventions would be. So I think one of the challenges upon us, and I don't want to speak for other health plans, but I've heard grumblings about the same thing, that we need complete better data so then we can design better interventions and programs.
I hear that. Yeah. Data is, it's hard. My day job, we're often considered like ahead of the curve, but it is really imperfect. And we have a lot of work to do. So great points. Now, one thing I wanted to discuss briefly is when we talk about healthcare inequities, you mentioned the word trust, right? Certain populations or cultures may not trust what they're being told, or maybe there's not providers who are from their culture or speak their same language. So I wanted to ask you, at Blue Shield Promise, how are you overcoming that maybe trust barrier, or folks who you're trying to move the needle to have better access to care, if they're resisting, how can you overcome that?
Sure. And when we look at trust, you almost have to understand the 400 years of oppression, right, in healthcare that have almost led to a lack of trust, right? We could talk about the Tuskegee study, which I'm sure you're familiar with. The Tuskegee study, it's almost like a public health 101. You take a public health 101 course, you're going to hear about the Tuskegee study. And that is where Black men with syphilis, they were in a governmental study, and the government told them that they were going to be treated for syphilis so that they can understand how the treatment will work in the body. Except for Black men, they left the syphilis untreated. And so this led to a cultural lack of trust in the system, right? So just giving you an example of what we're up against when we talk about trust and how this lack of trust could even be considered intergenerational, right? Transcending generations and generations of folks who are teaching families about the harm that has been done to communities and populations. So I think number one, again, going back to privilege and recognizing that people have been harmed by the system, and there's a lack of trust, not because they're fearful of a doctor, but because true harm has been done to certain communities. And so we have to rework that. So what we're doing at Blue Shield is working with our providers to talk about cultural competency, cultural humility, cultural sensitivity, recognizing where we can leave our own biases at the door and be able to help the patient that is in front of us, or the member that's in front of us, recognizing their cultural preferences, their needs. And so we are working right now to develop a training for providers on cultural sensitivity. And all of our providers have to actually take an annual training, but we're going to amp it up a little bit with some of the more updated research and some of the new topics. And that's actually a new Department of Healthcare Services requirement. We have to implement a new DEI training program. So every member or patient facing staff will have to complete that cultural competency, health equity training. So working with them. Another piece that I often see is we often want to, looking at the data, we want to match, right? So we want to match members to providers based on race and ethnicity. And I would challenge us, and I am challenging us here at Blue Shield, to look bigger and broader, because we know that the representation mathematically is not there, right? We cannot have, there are not enough Black doctors or Latino doctors in the workforce to be able to meet the representation that exists in California, even in Southern California, Northern California. So mathematically, it's not possible. So what can we do then, right? We can increase capacity. So looking at how do we build that cultural competency within our existing provider network? So maybe we don't have a Black doctor serving a Black member, but do we have a white doctor who is very comfortable serving the Black population, who speaks their cultural language, but who will be just as effective and build that trust, right? So that's, to me, what we're looking at, is building that capacity within our provider network, recognizing there will be some mathematical shortcomings, that the workforce is just not there. And so we've got to get a little bit more creative to be able to build that trust and then meet those needs of our members, specific to culture or language, or some of the norms that we see from our patients who walk in the doors.
Wow. Val, you have a lot of fire. This is really cool. A lot of passion. It's clear. And you've given clear vision of what you guys are doing at Blue Shield. Folks, I actually saw Val a couple weeks ago at the State of Reform Conference up in Sacramento. She'll be speaking by the time this episode's released. It'll be a couple weeks out in May in Burbank. So it's great to see that what you're doing is working and being highlighted in the healthcare community. Last question, I guess, like, what do you anticipate? Let's, you know, the whole 5-year question that we often throw out, like, for, let's call it 2027, 2028. Like, what do you see will be different then? What's your hope?
I I would hope that we will, as a collective, have made a difference, right? Setting aside competing health plans, but looking at the healthcare system and what's being delivered. Is it different? Is it better? Are we reducing that harm? Have we increased the trust? Have the disparities or the barriers just been removed so that everybody has equitable access to care and gets the same treatment and the same services? To me, that would be my vision if we could get there, right? Removing those barriers so we have that fair, just opportunity to achieve health equity. I think that it's going to take longer than 5 years. I think we all know that. But starting somewhere, right? Recognizing we've got some work to do. Let's start somewhere and let's measure. Let's measure that effectiveness so we can prove if we did this intervention, we know that resulted in bettering the system, our health outcomes. So in 5 years, I would love to be able to have proof points that said we identified challenges. We can look at breast cancer, right? With Black women not getting enough screening, let's develop an intervention, partner with the community, partner with our providers, and then measure and see, did we make a difference for the better? In 5 years, I would hope that we would be able to tout Blue Shield of California for sure to say we made a difference. But as a collective across the state of California, by way of this, the new mandates and the new chief health equity officer roles, I would hope and envision that we could get there and at least have made some progress in being able to dismantle some of those inequities and really have some positive health outcomes that we could out.
That's awesome. I would hope so too. And I love it again. Like 5 years is not going to be long enough. So I appreciate the reality of what you're saying. You're dreaming big, but also, you know, being realistic in how we can get there. So that's great. Val, I've asked a few questions. You've shared some great things. I want to make sure before we head out, is there anything else you want to share and make sure our audience knows about the work that you're doing there at BSP?
Let's see. I had a couple other notes, if I could bring them up. One is internally what we're doing to build that capacity. I think I shared it at the conference we were at, which was when you came up and talked. So I can share a little bit about that. Sure. And then also, I think I would be remiss if we didn't highlight the community work that we're doing with our community resource centers. I'll start there. So sure. For Blue Shield, we have a really great community outreach program through our community resource centers. And so we are just opening one on Friday, which is why it's top of mind, a new grand opening. And so they're sprinkled throughout Los Angeles County in the communities that need the most help and the most support. And so we partnered with LA Care in 2019, and it was about $146 million investment to be able to get these community resources up and running. But they're really, they're hubs, and they are vital resources and services to the community where they can go to get access to information about their healthcare, community resources. They're also addressing some of the social determinants of health by way of providing some of those referrals. But I just wanted to bring it up because I'm often there, and they're about once a week at each of the community resource centers, and to just be in the community and feel the energy and the appreciation is palpable. And so when we talk about health equity, I think people want to be able, again, to check a box. And so we could say, we've got a community resource center, we can check the box. But when you're actually out there and seeing people who are so appreciative and so deeply grateful, and you see the services in action. Oftentimes when we're there, there's a Zumba class. And so it's very lively, but being able to have a safe place to go and exercise, right? I think that the community resource centers are bridging that gap, recognizing the privilege that some of us have, right? Not everybody can go to a gym or walk around their neighborhood and get 30 minutes of exercise a day. So that's just a prime example of some of the needs that the community resource centers are meeting. So wanted to just highlight that because I think it's been an incredible resource for our members, especially when we talk about health equity and the populations who need that help.
I've been to one of your community resource centers with your partnership with LA Care, and I think it's really neat. And it was nice. And I told the folks there that I'd feel very comfortable bringing my wife and kids here. They had an event coming up. We weren't able to make it, but yeah, it was great. So I just wanted to give a shout out that I've seen it myself, and it was San Fernando Valley, I believe. Please continue. Yeah.
Oh, sure. No, they are beautiful. And you just see how much the community needs them and how much we can offer, right? Every time I go, I'm thinking we can do this and this and this. So it's really, it's just incredible. It's my dream as a health educator, you know, way back 20 years ago, rolling around my little cart with all of the stuff in a table. And here we have an entire building and the support we can provide. It's incredible.
That's great. Is there a second thing you wanted to bring up as well?
Yeah. I think just one thing that we're piloting is our, I mentioned our HEART program. We've got different elements of HEART. And one of them is a health equity advocate program. So one of our goals is to build a culture of equity. I talked about how I cannot be the only driver for health equity. And I liken it to a health equity highway, if you will. And I'm a driver on the highway, but I told Kristen, I want a jam-packed freeway of health equity advocates and people who get it and who are vehicles for change along this journey. So we started a pilot program. It's called the I Have Heart Health Equity Advocate Program. And so it's a peer-led program. We have 46 individuals who support Promise. They work in the health plan. And we have basically a peer-led program where they are creating initiatives to increase health equity knowledge. We had a panel on the future of AI in healthcare, and we got to ask questions about where is AI headed. We also engaged in a virtual cost of poverty experience where we worked through scenarios of what it's like for our members to have to make daily choices that will impact their life. Because we heard from people that they may not be out boots on the ground connecting with our members, but they want to stay connected to our purpose and to our mission and our values and our vision. And so we created this program. It has gone incredibly well. As I just wanted to share that you know, when we look at the role of the chief health equity officer, I hope that organizations are not placing the onus on one person alone, because one person will not be successful. So I just wanted to highlight what we're doing here to be able to increase that capacity, to keep people grounded, learn about the terms, learn about health equity, and we have a safe space for this continuous learning. And it has just been incredible. So it's been a pilot. We'll see where we're going to take it for the next group. We already have a wait list of folks who want to get in on this. So it's been pretty incredible. You had asked what am I proud of, or what have we accomplished? I think to me, I'm most proud of the fact that we've got, like I said, more people on the highway in their vehicles speeding along doing some of this health equity work, because I can't be at every table in every meeting, but we're building capacity to have the advocates be the voice for equity. So I'm really, really proud of that.
Well, Val, thanks again. Great highlights all over, especially with LA. But what about San Diego? Anything you want to highlight from San Diego as well?
Yeah, there is one project we're especially proud of. We recently launched a pilot in partnership with our quality improvement teams, our community and provider engagement teams, and at the YMCA of San Diego County and the Boys and Girls Club of Greater San Diego. We implemented a pilot looking at how we could improve well-child visits and outcomes for our children specific to those areas in San Diego. And so we collaborated with the Boys and Girls Club and the YMCA, and we were able to have over 300 of our members who actually attended a well-child clinic in those days. And during this time, some of our medical providers came on site, and they were able to close out some gaps in healthcare specific to our quality metrics for well-child visits, childhood immunizations. And it was really successful. We're especially proud of it because this community work is not easy. It's not easy to have an agency open up their doors to us for a weekend, bring in the clinical support, and then get the community and our members to actually come in. So there was a lot of community mobilization that was required to make this a success. But we heard, especially from one parent who was just overcome with emotion because his child was cognitively delayed, and the care that they experienced there, he was just so proud and so grateful that he was able to have that special one-on-one experience coming in and being able to get those services in what we would call an alternative way to deliver healthcare, right? Thinking outside the four walls of an exam room, how can we get creative and bring services to the community who are in most need? And so we were able to provide this innovative approach to delivering care outside of the traditional four walls of an exam room and getting into the community. And again, we talk about health equity, that we cannot do this alone. We have to partner with folks. And I think this is a prime example of where that collaboration actually made an impact in people's lives. And like we said, we had over 300 visits that were completed. So we're really proud of that work, that we were innovative, partnered, we're collaborative, but also centered the members' needs, recognizing that we have to provide alternative solutions, maybe on the weekends at different locations, to increase that access. And we saw the outcomes. So especially proud of that.
Well, they say person-centered care is a phrase we use, and you guys adapted to do that. So great stuff and great example there in San Diego. Well, Val, really appreciate you coming on today. Again, I've known you for probably about a year now. I think you're the first chief health equity officer I've met. And that's what sparked, I think, my initial hope to have you on. But you've been so busy, so really grateful we were finally able to make it work today. If folks want to follow you, are you on LinkedIn, or if folks want to see kind of what you're up to, what's the,
Yeah, I am on LinkedIn. You can find me, I think, if you search Valerie Martinez, Chief Health Equity Officer for Blue Shield Promise. I am on LinkedIn.
All right, folks, we'll encourage you to, again, check her out there on LinkedIn, Valerie Martinez, Chief Health Equity Officer. Really appreciate you being on the show today, and your PR and communications folks for making this happen. Take care, Valerie.
Thank you, Gavin, so much. Thank you for this opportunity. It's been incredible chatting with you, and I'll see you in a few weeks, too.
Sounds great. Thanks, Val.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode, and if you have and want to check out other episodes, visit us at pophealthpodcast.com, iTunes or Apple Music, Spotify, Stitcher, and now YouTube as well. Take care.